My name is Philip Barrington, and welcome to the first in a semi-regular series of podcasts where I explore the arts, my inspirations, meet curious fellows from around the UK, get drunk, and generally make a complete fool of myself. We are here today on a cold winter afternoon in a lounge area of one of my favourite King's Inn haunts, the Duke's Head Hotel. Not necessarily competitively priced, but in the presence of a lovely grandfather clock and subdued decor, there is a warm absence of alpha male, knuckle-slapping and chab-based aggro that you generally get in many other drinking hovels of the area, which is nice. I say we are here, for I am joined by West Norfolk artist and poet Stephen Pottle. Now, I'm more familiar with Stephen's art than his poetry, as we met around 7 years ago, I think, during his one-man gallery at the Art Centre, entitled For Real. Was that the correct title?
Yep.
Excellent. Stephen's painting, in my mind at least, explores issues such as loneliness, self-mutilation, and self-disgust in general, I think, often in the form of colourful, distinctively grotesque figures and feral babies trapped eternally in a 1980s hell. Was that a fair summary?
That actually sums me up.
Right, sorry, yeah. Yeah, I'm confusing the art with the artist.
They're all the same.
Well, if I've done you injustice, I apologise. Would you mind, in your own words, perhaps, describing your artwork in any way for the listeners, and perhaps how, if at all, your art links in with your poetry?
Wow, what a loaded question. I think your description is perfect of how I would describe it. Most of the photographs that I work from for my paintings are photographs taken in the 80s, and because I don't live in King's Lynn anymore, whenever I return to King's Lynn, it is like returning to the 80s, and suddenly I'm 15 years old again.
Right.
So, you know, that description is how I would describe my art.
Right.
Yeah, and the poems as well. There's some things you can't say visually. The blood and guts without, you know, getting really offensive. And so, yeah, that's where my poems have come from.
As I say, I saw you about seven or eight years ago. Yeah. I think nearly 8 years ago now. Yeah. It's been a while. I was lucky enough to have a meeting with you after I saw your work, and I really wanted to discuss things about, because it touched a nerve in me about my childhood to some extent, and especially popular culture references as well.
Yeah.
But there had a rawness to it and an honesty to it, and a sense of fun, which a lot of exhibitions don't have. So, so I was privileged to meet back up with you back in 2001, I think it was.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to know what kind of things you've been up to for the best part of a decade since I last saw you.
I've been asleep, I think, for a decade. I carried on painting for maybe 2 years after that.
Right.
And then life seemed to take over. And the visual art just took a back seat for a while. I was doing small sketches, but I was in a situation, physical situation, where I couldn't set up an easel, and I wasn't able to afford to buy materials. So everything became really, really small and really notepad sized.
Right.
And I think that's where the writing came from as well. And like I said, you know, if you can't get your blood and guts onto a piece of canvas, the next thing is a notepad, and you can carry it around with you as well. And there were so many things that I wanted to say in the For Real exhibition that it was like being exercised. It was all out there.
Yeah.
I felt really kind of empty afterwards. It was really odd. It was like I was possessed for 26 years, and then just suddenly, you know, I projectile vomited all over a gallery.
Right.
And it was kind of strange. I know I didn't have visually. I'd lost a sort of fire in my belly. It was
right.
Really, really odd.
I mean, was that your first solo show in a way, or was that leading up to that?
Yeah, we've at I was at Norwich School of Art, and you know, we've had lots of exhibitions in Norwich and in London and other places, exchange exhibitions. So yeah, but it was strange that my first solo show was in King's Lynn.
Right, right.
Which the whole show is about King's Lynn.
Wow. Yeah. There is an intimacy there then, perhaps, between what it was doing and where it was. This whole catharsis kind of like of your perhaps maybe, because I felt some of the paintings when I saw them as almost intruding on something. It was so personal, perhaps, but it's my own projection of things that could not be the case.
No, a lot of people have said, I either get people saying thank you so much or feeling the need to hug me. I had lots of hugs that the opening night.
I felt the need to hug you after seeing some of the works, definitely.
And I think that it was not only looking at the paintings and thinking that poor man, he needs a hug. I think it also tapped into, like you say, it tapped into other people's childhoods and things that people have lived with. And, you know, there was finally something on a wall that you could actually sit and look at and say, shit, that's my past.
Absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, it was, yeah. And by that time, it was completely, completely exhausted. Because a lot of the work was made for a degree show.
Right.
So by the time, you know, the following year, by the time I'd finished the rest of the exhibition, I was emotionally drained.
Right.
Which I think I needed to do because,
yeah,
you know, my outlook on life became sunnier.
I can understand that kind of thing because as I'm gearing up for my first solo show in February, seeing all the influences brought together and everything, and all the work that I've produced, I feel happier in myself.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that I disagree about modern society and things like that, which I haven't let go in the past of.
Yeah.
I see so much brutal things in the street. I use public transport in King's Lynn quite a bit, so if you don't see brutalism there, you don't see it anywhere.
I do think that... you're probably horribly offended, but I do think that your photographs are the photography version of my work. I think that's why I relate to them, you know, really strongly as well. Because it's almost like you're location scouting for my paintings.
Really? Right. It wasn't intentional. Yeah, there's no copyright issues going on here. No.
It's like we're making a film and, you know, I have these ideas about where I want my paintings situated. Then I go onto your site and see your photographs and say, it's there.
Right. There's an equilibrium there. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Right, that's very interesting, yeah. We bear similar things in that we're trying to explore. Well, not trying to explore. I think we do innate without control, almost the horror about our environment, about our own personal lives and things. That people who perhaps do the more. I think the most art that I've seen in King's Lynn are more touristy based and more about the pleasant aspects of a fishing community and things like that, which never touched me, and I'm sure it didn't really touch you as well. So, it's a personal projection about our environment that you paint or do poetry or photograph or record on film or things like that trouble us. And then in so doing so, it alleviates it. It's a catharsis, isn't it? In my opinion, it makes me feel better. So, I can imagine.
You know, I find I can write about anything that I'm feeling, but to actually stand there in front of people, and especially in front of an audience, and read. But the opportunity has come up a couple of times, and I've done it, and it's been very scary, but I've secretly enjoyed it. So,
really?
And planning on moving. Well, I'm actually moving to London, and a couple of people said, "Oh, you should do some, you know." Poetry reading night, so I've agreed, but it terrifies me.
Really? Right.
So yeah, I do see myself as writer, a poet, but I'm now delving into the whole performing. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
You mentioned earlier that you felt quite empty after your first solo show.
Yeah.
Which I saw. After performing in front of an audience, is there a similar feeling of emptiness, or that you've kind of used something up from inside yourself?
Yeah.
Or was it too romantic?
But no. It's sharing, isn't it? It's in a. You must get it as well when you, when you have an exhibition and people are looking at it. It's almost like when someone points a camera at you. You kind of feel like part of your soul has been taken away.
That's what Native Americans said, wasn't it? Take it. Oh, I can't remember the quote now, but yeah. Native Americans did say that. I'll confirm.
Confirmation. Need to look that up.
Yeah. Not all, but some. Do you find this form of expression about poetry more fulfilling than perhaps in many ways or painting? Is it different? Is it similar in the way that it's from yourself?
I find this. There doesn't seem to be as much confusion. Which is really strange that something visual can actually throw a complete curveball. But when I've read stuff to people, they said, "Yeah, I know exactly what you mean," or "I can see what you were trying to say." Whereas I find with a lot of my paintings, probably because I use that really grotesque image. It was like, why has that girl got a boy's face, and why is she? Why does she have a brick sticking out of her head? There's lots of really, there's questions. People would, going back to the abuse thing, people come up to me and say, "I'm really sorry you were abused as a child." And I was like, "I wasn't abused as a child. What is this?" It's cropped up three times now.
No abuse at five or at any time.
It was actually four.
Yeah, right. Got in early. Yeah.
It's not as you mean to go. But I found with, and you can actually put names of places and dates and things that you can't always put into a painting or something visual, because then it sort of, I found when I've put writing into something visual, it confuses people and they're like, am I reading something? Am I looking at something? How do I feel? Does the text give you something that the visual don't? And I find that I like when images do have the written word in them, but I find it confusing.
Yeah.
Probably being dyslexic as well. It's like, what is that?
Right.
What is that trying to say?
No abuse, but dyslexic, I think.
It's abused by dyslexia. From a very early age. Right.
Beyond before four, then.
Yeah, it started. I think it started in school.
Oh, I spilled a drink there. So we're about to explore the poetry aspect of your life, really.
Yeah.
Not just the period of your life. Your whole life influences everything, as you know. What kind of themes run through your poetry? It's hard to quantify things and feelings. But
I'm not sure. It is very fluid. I just have pieces of paper and envelopes and receipts with words and sentences and ideas drawn on the back of them. It's just ongoing. And that was the same as when I was at art school and doing degree show as well. I was constantly writing, but never thought that could also be something. And then because of not being able to paint or not feeling the need to paint, then it took over. So it's whatever is happening, whatever has happened, whatever I want to happen, whatever I'd like to happen.
Right, it's your daily life.
It is literally, I will get up and I'll start writing, and it does just fall out of me. And people will ask me, have I written today? And I say, yeah, it's just falling out of me. It is really strange. I'll be washing up and suddenly have to run through with wet hands and find a piece of paper.
Right.
Saying to my partner, quick, find a notepad, find an envelope, I need to write something. And again, the pop culture thing, I'll be watching a film or listening to a song and suddenly it will, create some words or an idea, and it goes from there.
I mean, do you think that quantifying things again, but more people have seen your art than have currently experienced your poetry, or more people have, in terms of audience?
I think at the moment, the people that I know presently and who I'm introduced to, people will introduce me as a poet or a writer rather than you know, an artist. And I think with online, it's easier for me to type up a poem, put it online and say to people, what do you think, or do you like this?
Right, more immediate.
I think that's what I like about writing. It's going to sound disgusting, but it is like cutting up a vein and pressing your hand onto the paper and take it off and go, that's it, that's what I wanted to do, as opposed to, and I'm not dissing painting, but, you know, you have to, there's so many sketches and probably why my visual work was so crude. People found it really crude because it was just, I'd run up to a board and just start scribbling on it and then throw some paint on it. Yes, that's what I wanted to see. And my tutors were like vomiting over themselves. It's like, you can't do that. It's disgusting. You need to prep and you need to research. It's like, but that, it's what I wanted to say. It's there.
That's right. There's no rules to expression, is there?
Exactly.
And your inspirations with regards to, and we've mentioned pop culture a couple of times, are there any specific people? I know we've exchanged Morrissey quotes quite a bit.
We are very sad with our Morrissey quotes. I was thinking about it on the way here, and you know, maybe if you ask me, I'd like to come up with all these great, you know, writers and artists, and I put on my iPod to walk here. And as soon as I put it on, it was on shuffle. Morrissey, The Streets I Ran, came on straight away. And I was like, that's just nailed it. That's, you know, that's an influence. And I don't think it's necessarily his words. It's the way he looks at things. It's kind of forever a teenager where, you know, he's constantly interested in what's happening and what has happened and how that influences, because in my head he's still 20 and, you know, and in my head I'm still, you know,
never gone to LA period or anything like that. He's still in Manchester, kind of.
Yeah, and you know, you can take the man out of Manchester, but it's, you know, you can't imagine him in a party in LA, you know, with a feather boa on or anything. You know, it is just gritty and interested in people and words and how people interact and how their past reflect who they are now. And I think I know a lot of people who stop doing that when they reach, you know, 20, 23, or, you know, relations, they get married and just stop questioning things or stop interested in things. I've actually got a poem called When Did You Stop Dancing? And it was, you know, people, I can't imagine not getting up in the morning and putting music on and how, you know, it excites my, ignites a fire in my belly, and, you know, I go, oh, I love this, and can you remember when that happened? And, you know, it's constant. Yes. Yeah. So it mainly music. Music really, yeah. Right. I have music on all the time.
Right.
I write to music as well.
Really?
So, yeah.
Several poets, notable in the 20th century, I think, save up their poetry as a body of work and then unleash it as a publication before anyone else has really perhaps seen or heard of it before.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in this kind of immediacy that you have of saying to people, what do you think, and having it out there. Is that part of the flow, that it's in your nature to show it to people fairly swiftly rather than storing things away?
Yeah, I think I find it difficult in normal, whatever normal life is, but to talk about how I feel or what I think about things, I get quite tongue-tied and you know, there's a whole education thing as well. It's like, you know, leaving school with hardly any qualifications, and you know, that's still, there's class things as well, and you find yourself in cities surrounded by you know, different classes, and I tend to take a step back unless I'm hideously drunk, and then I'll prove who I'm not.
I like to prove who I'm not. I tell you, every Saturday night, I love doing it. We're similar in that way as well.
But this, so I find this is especially through being ill the last couple of years. I tend to put stuff online and it is, have a look at this, but and also it's a bit of a cry for help or say, I'm here, this is how I'm feeling, you know.
It's, right.
Yeah, it's how I communicate. And also with music as well. I will make people compilations and, you know, it's secretly underneath it, it's like, hello, this is how I, this is how right. I feel about you, this is how I don't feel about you, and, you know, so it's just how I communicate.
You have a necessary need for expression for people in general in a kind of creative way.
Whether they want it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Force it down their throats, as I say.
It's but, either they read my poem or I don't ever speak to people again.
Right. Yeah, no middle ground there. No, I seem to remember about 8 years ago when I do compilation CDs for myself and my friends up until fairly recently. And I did a compilation of songs. At my most bleakest time 8 years ago, and it had Smith, I think The Cure was on there, and Joy Division. And I couldn't think of any kind of sentence or a quote from Blake or something like that, any kind of grand gesture, so I just call it death. And I covered all the CDRs with just black felt pen. So here you go, have that. That's my full stop.
But
goodbye.
You know, they can't have that and then look at it and go, you know, oh, we don't know how Phil's feeling, or, you know.
I gave him the signs.
Yeah, it's there. It's like taking your heart out and going, there you go, that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah. So. In a court of law, that piece of evidence exists, so it's always good to know. But now I'm catching up with you again after so many years. I'm really eager to know what your future plans are. I know you mentioned earlier that you're perhaps moving to London
in February, yes.
Right. you might miss my...
I should be back for that. I've penciled it in, yes.
Really? That'd be fantastic. Yeah. There'll be some absinthe waiting for you and some wine as well. So
I should be there in my ball gown. It's
really? Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. I'll bring my camera. Any future plans beyond that with regards to performance or writing? Any events coming up in the new year that are notable? Do you work from a day-to-day?
It is just day-to-day. It's... You know, you have you probably have it as well, you have a fuzzy idea of what you'd like to do and what, especially in somewhere like London, there's so many opportunities and people you know, could run into or places you could visit and, it's just, I'll just carry on writing and drawing and making compilations and see what happens. And if I have to stand up somewhere with a mic and talk about myself, then that's fantastic as well.
Do you come to King's Lynn much these days?
Not as much as I'd like to.
Right.
At the moment, it's a very odd world with me being unwell, and also my dad's unwell as well, so I've been coming backwards and forwards to visit him. So, yeah. I'd like to come, you know, every week at the moment. It was a while when I just wouldn't. I just couldn't because it does without it trying. I can feel every house. It may seem really odd, but I can feel the past in every house and every street, and it does it's one place that will drag me back and really affects my mood and my outlook on life. So
really,
yeah,
right.
it's really odd, you know.
King's Lynn has had a profound effect on you
in
a way.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's right. It's made me who, maybe the man I'm not. I should have gone one way and completely went the other. I have some good friends here, and I have, you know, all my family is still here as well. But yeah, it just has other things, other history that my brain just drags me back into it without me.
Right.
I can be in the best mood in the world, and as soon as I see the Campbell's soup,
yeah.
I just sink back into my sea, and it's horrible. And it's nothing to do with, you know, have the best family and some good friends, but it's just the actual buildings and the roads and certain streets I can turn down and just, I can feel life slipping away.
Right.
That sounds really dramatic.
No. I understand a thing. Some of what you mean. I suppose with your prolonged breaks away from Kingston, I suppose if there is change in the town, I suppose do you perhaps, I mean, what are your thoughts on a 21st century version of the town? Is it radically different? Is it trying to be different? What are your thoughts? Is it working? Is it not working?
I hadn't been back for about a year and a half, and it's almost like, I don't know, I compare the town centre now to what's happened to Michael Jackson's face. You can keep building on top of it, but underneath it's still what it was. That sounds really horrible. No,
that quote, I'm going to have to use that. That's fantastic. I'm going to rob that. I'm going to put it in a notebook and I'm going to use it when I'm at exhibition.
It's yours. It's my Christmas present to you.
Thank you. Yeah. Wrapped and everything. Fantastic.
But I think because I know people who are completely poor and completely struggling, and you know, there's drugs and there's drink and there's abuse, and no matter how pretty or grotesque you try to make the town on the outskirts, you know, you can walk away from the nice looking town centre and go down a street and it's still the horrible 80s.
It's around the corner, isn't
it? Yeah. And people have that as well. You can entice them into have nice clothes from TK Maxx, but they still go home to their husband beating them up. It's little things like that that are still there. And they're the things that I think they should be concentrating on. You know, South Lynn, you know, they should be concentrating on that instead of, you know, building a new community centre or a new school. It's the actual people that they should be reaching out for and, you know, and helping them. That's my humble opinion. Yeah, no.
Very
I won't be able to visit King's Lynn anymore.
No. Yeah. Don't be able to pitchforks and torches.
No change there, then. You've seen my work. You know me.
Yes, I do. finally, if there's some of the listeners want to see some of your work online, is there a could I perhaps put a couple of images maybe on the website or links to the website
in some way.
And then perhaps they can find out more?
Link me to hell, that would be fantastic.
I'll link you. I'm writing that down as well. Under the abuse thing, I'll link you to hell.
There's a place called writerscafe.com where I have most of my poems up. You don't have to join, you can just, you know, be a guest and go and have a look through. But if you want to put a comment and tell me how rubbish they are, then you'll have to join.
Okay.
But well, there's Facebook and MySpace, I'm on there, and all my work's on there as well, so
right.
Come and find me.
I'm sure we'll log on and link you to hell, definitely. Thank you very much for coming along today and having a drink with me.
That's fantastic. Double gin and tonic does the world a good.
Absolutely, yeah. Listeners won't be able to see the amount of glasses that's proliferating the table.
It's like some where they have piles of things. They're trying to do like a Guinness World Record. It's just the floors covered in glasses.
Yeah. Well, I've seen at least three or four members of the Pogues going out and shuddering because they've seen the table. They draw the line.
Shane McGowan told me he's disgusted with me.
Right, yeah, absolutely. You think you've let yourself go.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad this hasn't got visual. Yeah. They'd be able to see.
Well, I hope to see you again very, very soon. Please do come back to us and we'll keep in touch.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.